This morning, we have sunshine, 35 degrees in both Racine and Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Well, in case you haven't guessed it already, we are talking on this portion of the morning show about Disney's The Little Mermaid. That was the opening to a really beautiful suite from a CD on Telarc called The Magical Music of Disney. And we're talking about The Little Mermaid in this portion of the morning show because it is about to open at the Racine Theater Guild, the production that was actually first seen last year. And we're very happy to have in our studios for the morning show today, first of all, Doug Instanis, managing and artistic director of the Racine Theater Guild and the stage director of this production. And also with us, Kaylee Annable, someone I have known for a long, long time because Kaylee, once upon a time, was a music student at Carthage College, so highly regarded then and now, has gone on to do some really exciting things on stage. And she has one of the really most interesting and delightful roles in this cast of The Little Mermaid, the role of Scuttle. And we're going to be talking about that. And she was part of the original set of performances last year and very happily came back to reprise her role. And so she's in the studios with us as well to talk about the fun and excitement and color and sparkle of Walt Disney's The Little Mermaid. Doug Instenis, Kaylee Annable, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Morning.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. And Kaylee, we were talking right before you went on the air that 1,000 years ago, you actually came on the morning show to talk about something neither of us remember what.
No, I just remember being in this room.
All right. Well, we're glad you found your way back, and I'm so glad that you can be part of this. So, Doug Instenis, let's talk first about how The Little Mermaid first showed up on the schedule in the season of the Racine Theatre Guild last year, and then how it reappeared. How do those kind of decisions get made, and how often does this sort of thing happen?
Sure. The staff and volunteers are part of what's called a play reading committee, which we sit around and we read lots of plays. We listen to lots of musicals. And last year we thought, you know, coming out of COVID and we needed to do something fun. We needed to do something well-known, something that you know, would be great for families to come see and celebrate together during the holidays. And, you know, we went through a lot of plays and said, well, you know, we haven't done The Little Mermaid. Why haven't we done The Little Mermaid? Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful show. So we picked it, did a great job. It was so much fun. Audiences loved it. Sold really well. And then, again, on the play reading committee, we're trying to figure out what we're going to do. Now, this is very undramatic and very unartistic, but it costs a lot of money to mount a show like The Little Mermaid the first time around. Doing it a second time around, it costs less. So, it's a huge show, so it's taxing on the production staff, the lights, sound, sets, props, costumes. It's a huge amount of work. So doing it a second time allows us to relax a little bit during our 8-show production cycle. It also lets us make some changes, and maybe we ran out of time last time on something, and so now we can spend a little bit more time on this aspect or that aspect. And as I told the cast, you know, we can always go back and do what we did last year because that was fun and it worked. Or maybe we got a different idea that could also be fun and interesting and maybe work a little bit better. So let's use our creativity. We got half the cast is new. They're going to bring new ideas and new energy and you know, fun things for us to do. So it's always nice to do a show a second time. We've done that a number of times at the Theater Guild, mostly to offset the initial cost. And also because it sold real well. And, you know, supply and demand. People wanted to see it. We're going to produce it.
Very good. Kaylee, tell us what prompted you to seek out the opportunity to audition to be part of the show. And I think you really had the role you were ultimately given in mind, if I'm not mistaken.
I did write it down on my audition sheet. We fill out a little sheet when we come in, and you can write roles that you're interested in, or if you have an idea. And it was one of the ones I listed, a couple. I didn't expect it, to be quite honest. I just thought, hey, I'll write it down and see what happens. And then I got a call back, and I was like, you know, this character is really fun. I can do a lot of fun things with it. And it's always, for me, those secondary characters or the quirky ones that are the most fun, because you can just go all out and put a little bit of yourself into it too. So that's what really intrigued me to the role. And I get a little tap, which I haven't done since college for a while. So I brush off my tap shoes and get in there. It's always fun to take on a new challenge.
Absolutely. Well, you do a fabulous job with this character. We'll talk about Scuttle a little more in just a moment. Doug, you've just spelled out, I think, very nicely the fact that on kind of a technical level, it makes a lot of sense to bring back a big show again, because you're not building every set and building every costume and so on, an enormous undertaking the first time around. What about the whole matter of auditioning folks and having some people return, other people choosing not to or being unable to for whatever reason? So having this mix of people returning and brand new people, how does that typically work, and what kind of challenges does that pose to you as the director?
Well, technically, nobody is guaranteed you know, a role. So it's not like, well, you were Scuttle the first time, so now you're Scuttle this time. So, you know, technically, everybody has to re-audition. However, when someone just hits it out of the park the first time, okay, so we're a little skewed to the fact that, okay, well, we consider other people, but, you know, she was so good last year. You know, it's really hard to say, well, we found somebody better this year, because that's just not true. And so there's a different energy, and I think, you know, to a certain degree, you want people to come back because they had such a marvelous time last year. And it's part of the family, and, oh, it's revisiting an old friend, and not only friend as in people, but a friend as in the material and the organization. And this is how we want to spend our holidays. And we have people that have done the holiday show, like Rose Bliss, I think, has been an assistant stage manager 30 years on the holiday show.
Wow.
You know, I mean, she, that's just what she does to give back to the community and give back to people. I work the community show. I work the kids shows, the ones that have school children being bused to them because it means something to them. So there's a lot of excitement around the outreach show, the show that we do for the daytime performances for the kids. And so I'm glad people want to come back. I see that as you know, we always have this thing, one and done, which is kind of a bad thing. You know, I do one show and then I'm done. You know, I'm going to go on to do other things. But when you come back, that says something about the organization and the commitment that people make to community theater. So it's fun to see new people because they bring new ideas and new things. We get stuck in a rut sometimes. Well, this is how we did it last year. And I told everybody that they could say that once this year. And then after that, they can't. You know, because, okay, we did that last year. But this year we got a new cast. Let's do new things and have more fun.
Hmm. Kaylee, was it a hard decision for you in terms of whether or not to try to come back and be Scuttle again in The Little Mermaid?
Only in terms of my personal life schedule. Not in terms of if I wanted to do it or not. Absolutely not. That was not a hard decision. Just because the holidays are busy for everybody. It's a hard time, and I've had a lot going on, but I really wanted to do it because I had so much fun last year. And like he said, the student outreach program is really awesome because you can, you know, we do a talk back afterward for the students, and it's really fun to hear some of their questions are very interesting. Yeah. And it's just cool to see the immediate impact that you make on them, and you know, it's huge. And I didn't get to do that when I was a kid. My school didn't have something like that. I didn't grow up in the area, so it is really cool for me to be able to see that. So if I have a chance to do that and do a super fun role, I'm going to take it.
Hmm. For those of you just joining us in our studios, we have Doug Instanis and Kaylee Annabel talking about the Racine Theatre Guild's production of A Little Mermaid. It opened last year and was a tremendous success, and it's back now with many of the original cast, including Kaylee Annabel. Our Little Mermaid is back, our Prince Eric is back, and a number of other, our Sebastian is back, a number of other significant people in the cast, but some other newcomers bringing a very exciting energy to the proceedings. And the production opens this coming Friday and runs for 2 weekends. Doug Instanis, maybe you can summarize for anyone who's not seen The Little Mermaid what the story is.
Well, it takes place under the sea, where this little mermaid is longing to have a better life and different life, and she's fascinated by the world above. And then we have Prince Eric, who loves the sea, and he, I guess by law, has to be married to inherit his father's kingdom. So he's technically looking for a bride. And there's a shipwreck, and Ariel saves his life and sings to him. And he has that song in his brain, and he can't get it out. And he's searching for this voice, this person who saved his life. And you know, so in the meantime, of course, we have evil people. We have Ursula, who is King Triton's sister, and she's the mean one, and she wants to take over the seas, and she wants to get at Triton so she can be the boss. And so she tries to use Ariel to take over Triton's kingdom. So she makes a deal with Ariel that she can make her human for a period of time, and she can go up and be with Eric But she has to give up her voice to do that. That's the price that she has to pay to have legs. So she does that, and she has to get Eric to kiss her within 3 days. Otherwise, she burns forever in the fiery lair, you know, so she becomes Ursula's prisoner. So anyway, they meet. She doesn't talk. Eric is infatuated with her, takes her on boat trips and horseback riding, and finally falls in love. And right before the end of the third day, end of the third day comes, and doesn't get kissed. And so Ariel is pulled back down into the ocean, and King Triton has to make a decision to, give up his life for his daughters, and he does, and then,
et cetera, et cetera.
Et cetera, et cetera. boy gets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl back, and everybody lives happily ever after. Bad guys are punished, good guys win.
Right. I was going to say, not quite everybody lives happily ever after. I'm not sure Ursula would agree with you,
right.
but yeah. So it's a great story, an ancient story, of course, yeah. And really transformed in interesting fashion in this Disney adaptation. Kaylee, tell our listeners a bit about your particular character and the role that Scuttle plays in these proceedings.
Sure. Well, Scuttle is first and foremost a seagull. That's very important. Originally, I believe he's intended to be a male in the original, the Disney original movie. So we kind of gender bendered it. It doesn't matter, but it's fun for that little fact. Anyway, he's kind of plays a friend sort of figure to Ariel. In between liaison between the human world and the mermaid under the sea world. He seems to think he knows a lot about human stuff and, their artifacts and whatnot. So Ariel
the Dingle Hopper.
The Dingle Hopper, the very well-known Dingle Hopper. So Ariel comes to him and asks a lot of questions about what is this, what's it used for, blah, blah, blah. So that's where she gets all her information is filtered through the eyes of a seagull who thinks he knows a lot about what he's talking about, but he really doesn't. Scuttle is very fun because the character has such a great attitude on life. And whether he doesn't really know what he's talking about, the idea behind it is just keep a positive attitude and keep your chin up and keep trying. And that's all that really matters. And, you fake it till you make it. One day somebody will believe you, or, hey, one day you'll start something new and you really will know what you're talking about.
Right. And tell our listeners about the big song you sing, Positivity.
It's super fun. Scuttle in the Disney movie does not have a song in the original movie. So, it's fun that he gets one in the show, and there's a little tap in there and make it a little extra exciting. But the song is called Positivity, and that's just what it was about. What I was talking about is his positive attitude. Scuttle, this is right after Ariel gets her legs, and she's trying to figure out how to walk, and she doesn't believe that she can do it, and she'll never accomplish this huge task ahead of her. And Scuttle comes in and says, hey, don't think all the negative thoughts that you're having. You got to think positive about it. But, of course, in Scuttle's fun language, it comes out positivity. So it's a whole really fun number about keeping it upbeat.
I wonder if you could give us just a line or two of Scuttle's speaking, just because one of the things I love is the way, and I'm sure Doug had something to do with directing you, the way you deliver Scuttle's lines, the voice,
the bird like quality,
the accent, whatever that is. I mean, it's just great.
Sure. So, I'll do the line coming into my song, I guess. How does it start? Now I'm nervous. I can't do it. Well, look who's just got beached. There's something different. No, don't tell me. I'll decipher it for myself. Your hairdo. You've been using a dingle hopper.
It's her legs. She's got legs.
Yeah, and when I was trying to come up with an initial idea for the character, Scuttle has got a kind of a distinct voice from the original movie, so a couple lines I kind of tried to add some flair of what the original character would kind of sound like, But only, I have a very distinct voice, too, in my normal speaking, as you can tell. So I just kind of tried to play around with that, too, and mix the two together. And the fun accent kind of came out of the way the words were written, primarily, but also how I viewed the character. And fun fact, I don't know if she's listening, but I kind of tried to pull a little bit of my mom into Scuttle a little bit because my mom loves to collect things. She loves antiques, so a lot of her knowledge about antiques I got from her, and she doesn't pronounce words correctly all the time. They get a little jumbled, so I kind of tried to pull a little bit of her energy into it too.
Well, congratulations, Mom, and thank you for your contribution.
We'll get her a free ticket. Just let me know.
Sure, thank you.
Very, very good. So it really is a terrific production, and Doug, one of the interesting things about it, of course, is that there's a mix of young and old, including a fair number of young people who are part of this cast, which I should think adds its own special energy and maybe a few challenges for you as well.
It does, and it's fun, and that's part of the crazy Theater Guild family. You've got 10-year-olds bringing their homework, and you've got 70-year-old makeup people helping them with their homework and making sure they did that. And so you got a lot of moms, a lot of dads, a lot of brothers and sisters, and crazy aunts and uncles, I'll tell you that. So it is fun. And I think, you know, it's exciting to see things through different people's eyes, you know, and I think the older people are wonderful, wonderful role models for kids that are just starting out in theater, how they approach the work, how they show up, how they treat each other, how they give full out. You know, that was exciting for me. The people that came back, you know, they did 20-some shows last year. And from day one, from the first rehearsal, they went full out. Mm. And they didn't have to, you know. They know the lines. They know the blocking. But they were there for the rest of the cast members so that the other cast had something to play off of, to work with, to see this is how we approach the work. And then the older people see the magic through the younger people's eyes because they're in the wings. They know all the words, and they know all the dance numbers, and they're so excited, and you know, and then they all cry at the end because their life is over because the show is done, and so I think the young and old give something to each other that is very valuable.
We should mention that in addition to these two weekends of public performances, and tickets are going fast, by the way, there are also, as we've I think briefly mentioned, daytime school performances, and of course one of the tricks about that is that it's not exactly the same performance, or it doesn't play out in exactly the same way as the evening performances for the public.
Well, we don't do any intermission, so because if you get the kids in intermission, you're never going to get them back. And we've also found that curtain call can be a disaster for young people. Mm-hmm. They clap for about, you know, 5 seconds, and then they're done. So normally musicals have these grandiose curtain calls where everybody's coming out. This one is lights up, everybody clap, we're done. Okay. And as you said, we do a talk back. And it is really fun, the kids, the questions that they ask, what they see, what is interesting to them. So that's fun to have that time with the audience. I think the cast really enjoys that.
Very good. Kaylee, I wanted to give you a chance to just briefly talk about some of the really exciting things that you've done on stage since graduating from Carthage. And what year was that?
10 years ago, 2013.
Ooh. Okay, well, happy anniversary.
Well, thank you.
And so, I mean, and I know you've done, you know, kind of a wide variety of different things. And how does this fit into that wonderful mix?
Wow.
This one she doesn't get paid for, so that's a good one.
Yeah. That's quite all right. I enjoy myself. Wow, it's been quite a decade. I've been very blessed to continue to work for the most part. I've done a lot. I've done a lot at Skylight in Milwaukee. I've done some down at Derby Dinner Playhouse near Louisville. That's been a great time. It's been fun to take contracts away from home, you know, just to do a little bit of something different, have new friendships, new... You never quite know what you're going to get into when you travel and for work like that. It's been fun. I've done things from Pirates of Penzance at Skylight to 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee at Skylight. Very different. It's been a blessing, really, and it's been fun to develop myself as an actor and in the community. So then COVID hit, yay. and that, you know, really took a hit for everybody, not just the theater community, but everybody. So that threw me off track for a while. I had to do some other things. And this was actually the first show I did.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's how it kind of came to be. And after COVID stuff, you know, life got crazy. I got married. We built a house. So, you know, life just happens. Mm. And this kind of, my friend was auditioning and she said, hey, you should audition too. What if we get into it together? I said, oh, okay, sure. Maybe. I was hesitant, but I did it and I got a role I didn't expect. And now it's turned into this. I've been having so much fun and I'm really glad that it kind of push me into getting back into theater stuff. So who knows what the future holds.
Wonderful. That's really great. And by the way, what drew you to Carthage in the first place as a student way back?
Yeah, that's funny. I'm going to be completely honest. I got a postcard in the mail. I didn't even know Carthage existed. And I got a flyer in the mail, and it was near auditioning times, and I was thinking, hey, where do I want to go to school? I'm from Indiana originally, so it was an out-of-state option. My family doesn't come from a lot of money, so I didn't think it was an option, to be honest. And I came up here. I did an audition. I got a scholarship, and my grades were good, so they waived the out-of-state fee for me, and they Carthage and the music department really helped me come up with an option to be able to go there. So, and they gave me a great education. So thank you for all the kind things you said in my introduction, but it's because of you and other teachers like you that I am able to do what I am.
Wow. Well, it was great to know you and see you in action back in Carthage. And since, I've seen you twice, I think, at the Skylight. And wonderful to see you on stage. I'm so glad you're back as Scuttle. It's delightful what you do with this part. Great to have you here. And again, it's a wonderful opportunity to have people see the wonderful Ariel and Eric and Ursula and so on from last year. But peppered amidst the cast, some newcomers that also bring an exciting new energy to The Little Mermaid. So Doug Instanis, tell our listeners what they should do and how quickly they should do it if they want tickets for The Little Mermaid.
You can order tickets online at www.racinetheater.org or call the box office at 262-633-4218, or you can stop by the theater from noon to 6. Or give us a call, and we'll set you up with some tickets for the next 2 weekends.
Very good. The Little Mermaid at the Racine Theater Guild. Doug Instanis, managing and artistic director of the Racine Theater Guild, and Kaylee Annable, the Scuttle in our cast. Thank you both for being here, and best wishes to you, cast and crew of The Little Mermaid.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
And we'll finish out with a bit more music to take us to part two of today's morning show here on WGTD. Under the sea, nobody beat us, riots and beat us, can't bring us sea. We cross the land for the roof, roof. Under the sea, we are the hook. We got no troubles, life is a bubble. Under the sea, under the sea, under the sea, under the sea. Just like a sweet year, we got the beat here naturally. Even the sturgeon and the rain, they get the urge to start to play. It's 8:40, and that was an excerpt from this lovely Telarc compact disc called The Magical Music of Disney. Eric Kunzel and the Cincinnati Pops Orchestra with the Indiana University Singing Hoosiers. And there are suites, actually, from The Lion King, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, and the show we've been talking about today on the morning show, The Little Mermaid. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Part two of today's program comes from the Morning Show archives, an interview that originally aired back in 2013. I'm very excited for the next few minutes to speak with a very talented writer by the name of Tim Federle. Tim Federle actually has other talents, in fact, talents that have taken him to the Broadway stage as a performer. He has also worked with other performers on Broadway, including the child stars of the musical Billy Elliot. Tim Federle, more to the point today, has written a wonderful novel called Better Nate Than Never, which describes the amazing adventure of a teenage boy who more than anything wants to sing in a Broadway show. And with the help of a young friend who harbors similar but even more improbable dreams, manages to make his way from his small town in Pennsylvania to New York City and talk his way into an audition for a musical version of the beloved movie E.T. It's a great book, and it's a novel actually designed for young readers, published by Simon & Schuster as part of their series of books for young readers. But I have to say, I loved this book from start to finish, and all kinds of adult readers have weighed in with great enthusiasm for the story which Tim Federle tells. And we have him on the phone to talk about this novel, Better Nate Than Never, and we're doing it ahead of a visit which he's making to southeastern Wisconsin, which we'll talk about in just a little bit. Tim Federle, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here, Greg. Thank you.
So this young protagonist in the story, Nate, I have a feeling is to some extent a reflection maybe of who you were in high school. Tell us about the parallels and maybe if there are any differences, point those out to us as well between Nate and Tim Federle.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nate's a 13-year-old boy, but I do think to some extent every grown-up guy is a little bit of a teenager forever. So there are aspects that we certainly share. Nate is kind of obsessed with theater, and he gets a bit teased for it in his school, which is in a sort of fictional small rural hometown in Pennsylvania. I would say the biggest differences between me and Nate are that I have parents who are very... Parents who, by the way, met and went to college at Marquette.
Ah, really?
And they met in their college choir. So even though neither one of my parents went into the arts, they were always very supportive of my older brother and me and our pursuits of the arts, especially mine. So, you know, I do share some qualities with Nate Foster and Better Nate Than Ever, but a lot of it is it's fictionalized just because I didn't want my parents to sue me.
Right. It's an interesting story, and it's a story that certainly has some pain. But one of the things that I think I appreciated about the book, and I think a lot of young readers would appreciate this too, is that in a sense, it seems to me anyway, you managed to share with us the rather harsh reality of being picked on or bullied a bit, but not in sort of its full awfulness. I mean, this Nate is not bullied to the sort of brutal extent that we sometimes hear about and that can lead to tragic results. It's not quite that scenario. And for instance, his parents, they have some problems as parents, but they're not awful parents. And he has an older brother who's a really good athlete, but he's not an awful older brother. I mean,
right.
In some ways, I don't feel like you're shying away from life's harshest reality so much as serving up a story that feels more real because it isn't quite so garish in terms of what's bad about Nate's life.
Yeah, Greg, you're picking up on things that I was really hoping to incorporate when I wrote the book, which is to say, a lot of Nate's life, like a lot of our lives in real life, has a sort of like low grade fever quality. It's kind of uncomfortable. It's not perfect. The kids at school don't totally get him. But I wanted to write something kind of aspirational where maybe kids and adult readers, like you mentioned, could say, oh, yeah, that, you know, sometimes life stinks and there are moments in every day, whether it's going to the gym or getting looked at for maybe dressing a little bit differently or saying something that's a little bit strange in your community, but that there might be a place for you out there where you really belong. And so I wanted to incorporate some of those kind of bullying elements because it's what I grew up with, but it wasn't what defined my life. And I think so often the stories that we tell to kids are either very, very dark or they're kind of full of half-truths and, you know, rainbows and lollipops. And I wanted to do something that sort of struck something, for me at least, a little more realistic.
I think you've really achieved that, and I think you just now said it very, very well. One of the abiding themes is of Nate's anxiousness to get out of this little town of, is it Junkburg? Is that the name?
Jankburg.
Jankburg. Jankburg, Pennsylvania. And you say at one point he's thinking to himself what he thinks the motto of the town should be. It should be emblazoned on a sign. 48.5 miles from Pittsburgh and 1,000 miles from fun. I mean, this is a little town that he just finds sort of, in a sense, hopelessly oppressive and just not a town and populated with people that just don't understand him.
Well, that's, you know, at time, I grew up outside of Pittsburgh, and it's funny, I now look at it with so much sort of warmth, and it's taken on the patina of, you know, there's some sentimentality now on my part, because I moved to New York City myself when I was a teenager to kind of chase my Broadway dreams, and now 14 or so years later, there are times when it's like, oh my gosh, if I hear one more cab honking in the middle of the night. And so there are times when I go, ah, if only the glory days of living in Pittsburgh where it was so quiet in the suburbs. And I think even Nate, who experiences some hardships in Jankburg, PA, when he gets to New York and experiences some of the discomforts of such a fast, frenetic city, even little Nate, who dreams of performing on Broadway, realizes there are some assets to his hometown.
Right. Although I also think you do a fantastic job of helping us understand how a youngster like Nate would look at an amazing city like New York City. Imagine pretzels sold on the street. It's as if anything is possible.
Well, I remember that's how it felt when I was 14 and my mom took me to New York for the first time as a big, you know, gift for, you know, not getting a C on my report card. My parents, we worked in opposite fashion because I struggled in school. It's like if I didn't get a D, I got a dollar. And she took me to New York, and I'll never forget. It's like when you give a little kid, you know, this big fancy toy and they end up playing with the box. And we landed in New York, and I remember looking outside the hotel window at this sea of yellow taxi cabs, and I just stared at it, mesmerized for 15 minutes, and she's thinking, we came all the way to New York City for Tim to, like, look at a bunch of cabs? but you know, that's what you're picking up on, Greg, in part is that I wanted to fall back in love with New York, which can be full of edges and, you know, loud noises. And I, when I was working on Billy Elliot, where I trained the young child stars on Broadway, I became enamored of the way they were just so taken with New York, and it was so fun to them. And I decided, you know, this might be a good place to write, you know, a novel about a kid who crashes an audition for E.T. the Musical. And that's what I wanted to do with Better Nate Than Ever.
One of the things that makes this adventure possible is that he has a co-conspirator who doesn't go along with him, but helps in the planning of this, and help sort of mask the fact that Nate is gone. And this is his good friend, Libby, who harbors many of the same interests, and so they are these two quirky, offbeat personalities who mesh so beautifully together, and it really makes a difference in terms of Nate being able to pursue this dream. Tell our listeners what these two do when they want to curse. This is so funny.
Well, it is a book for middle graders, and so I wanted to get, you know, the book is aimed squarely at kids sort of 9 to 14 years old, though I've been lucky enough to hear from a lot of adult readers who get a kick out of it. And so I wanted to be appropriate with the way these kids would swear. So what they do is they shout out legendary titles from flop Broadway musicals. So, you know, something terrible happens. He misses the bus to New York or something, and he goes, you know, moose murders it all to tarnation.
Right.
Moose murders is like the most legendary Broadway flop of all time.
Right. Or Holy Dance of the Vampires. Or, I mean, if it was movies, it would be like Holy Ishtar. That would be a way to,
totally,
to swear the way
Holy
that I love that. One of the things which drives this dream for Nate is that he lives to some extent in the shadow of an older brother who is a wonderful athlete, especially in track. And at one point you have Anthony thinking to himself in the midst of this journey, everything is riding on me making this happen. I have to return home as good as Anthony is at something, anything, or not return home at all, preferably. Tell us just a little bit more about how you painted this relationship between Nate and his older brother, Anthony. Again, I think you do it in very realistic yet interesting fashion.
Thank you so much, Greg. I grew up in the shadow, a long shadow, of a very brilliant older brother who went on and had this Ivy League education, and he was 3 years older than me. And I think for a lot of kids who have an older sibling, every time you get to math class on the first day of school, the teacher says, oh my gosh, I had Andy Federle and he was so brilliant. And it's like, oh great, the pressure's on. And when you're a kid, you're already worried about, you know, the new zit that just formed on your nose and the fact that maybe, oh gosh, I don't have the coolest new pair of shoes. So to add on top of that, the legacy of a brilliant older sibling can be quite heavy. Now, Andy and I have gotten quite close as adults, but I wanted to dramatize that feeling that I think a lot of kids have when they're trying to carve out their own voice but feel the sort of heaviness of whether it's an older sibling or parents who expect something of them. And for Nate, in Better Nate Than Ever, he really is he is the definition of a black sheep or maybe a pink sheep. And he just doesn't fit into his family. And so I wanted that older brother there to really illustrate within, you know, three pages of chapter one that even though our families may love us, they don't always understand us. And
right.
That's what's amazing about, you know, the arts. I know that you're also into, you have a big music background, Greg. And anybody who's into the arts knows that you can make up your own family of, you know, misfit toys when you get into music or theater.
it's absolutely true. And we haven't actually talked very much about the show for which he's auditioning, a musical version of E.T., or the fact that you do an incredible job of describing what we presume to be something that at least somewhat resembles what it's like to show up for an open audition where you find yourself lost in a sea of hundreds of young, hopeful faces, many much better prepared than Nate is. And yet, in a sense, because he sort of walks in off the street, not really ready for this, not really polished, it's one of the things that actually helps him stand out in this crowd. Does that reflect real life at all? I mean, is it possible for an audition like Nate gives to sort of cut through the crowd?
It really is. I mean, I wrote Better Nate Than Ever for people who are already fans of things like Glee and Smash and Dance Moms, Pitch Perfect. You know, that was all sort of in mind. But I also wanted to tell something maybe a little more realistic about what really happens. I ran a lot of auditions for Billy Elliot, and I also I have auditioned for probably 500 things in my dance career. And the irony about what happens at a children's Broadway audition is that so often the really super polished, over-the-top, glitzy kids get overlooked because it's like it's too much. And it actually can be more attractive to meet a kid who has this like a really natural, honest quality that you can actually coach yourself and sort of train them into being the Billy Elliot or whichever character, you know, they might someday play. So absolutely, a kid with great heart and soul can always cut through the overly polished kind of stuff.
Well, we follow this amazing adventure of Nate in this really great book called Better Nate Than Never, published by Simon & Schuster for their series Books for Young Readers. And the author, Tim Federle, will be coming to Oak Creek for a special event co-sponsored by Boswell's Bookshop at the Oak Creek Community Center on Tuesday, April 9th at 6:30 p.m. in the Oak Creek Community Center. Tim Federle, by the way, I saw Bernadette Peters on Broadway in Gypsy, so that means I maybe saw you. You were in that, right?
Yes, I only missed one performance, and it was to get my wisdom teeth out. And in those days, I was so dogged about not missing a show that I came back looking like a chipmunk. So unless you saw the one performance where I was away, you know, getting dentistry done, you wouldn't see me and,
wow.
And you know, most likely paid more attention to Bernadette.
Although I got to say, those boys who sang extra, extra, read all about it, did just great. So,
yes,
Tim Federle,
I'm
glad to reconnect with you today, and best wishes with the future writing that you do, and congrats on Better Nate Than Never.
Thank you so much, Greg.
And again, this interview that just aired, dated from 2013, so you should disregard all mention of that upcoming performance, or presentation, I should say, by Mr. Federle. And by the way, Better Late Than Never recently was transformed for the screen in a highly regarded television adaption, which was written and directed by the author, Tim Federle. Tomorrow on the morning show, we are going to be previewing for you Saturday afternoon's concert by the Kenosha Symphony Orchestra. A concert that is going to feature not only the talented musicians of the KSO, but also dancers from the Kenosha Academy of Arts, and also the Lincoln Chamber Singers from Carthage College. So we are going to be having a conversation with Maestro Bob Hasty, who will be the conductor, with Dr. Maggie Burke from the Carthage College Music Faculty, who is the director of the Lincoln Chamber Singers, who will play a very prominent role in Saturday afternoon's concert, and Peter Rodriguez, who is a member of the orchestra and also president of the board. And on Friday, we will preview some other things going on this weekend, holiday-themed, including what looks to be a sparkling and colorful production of A Charlie Brown Christmas at the Rohde Center for the Arts in downtown Kenosha, presented by the Lakeside Players. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, wgtd.org. Partly sunny today, breezy and seasonal, a high of 39 degrees. Some clouds will roll in overnight with a low of 35. Sunny tomorrow and will warm to a high of 53 degrees. And on Friday, under mostly sunny skies, a high of 58. Cloudy over the weekend with a decent chance of rain and not quite as warm. This is WGTDHD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. NPR News and Classic.